Welcome to the Consummate Athlete Podcast, where we explore what it means to be a well-rounded, happy, goal-crushing athlete. Every week, myself, sports journalist Molly Herford, and cycling coach and kinesiologist Peter Glassford interview experts and chat through all of your training questions. We're excited to have you along for the ride.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Consummate Athlete Podcast. Peter, how's it going?
It's going well. We're back with another question today, so I'm excited for that. Have you been writing any great articles recently?
I mean, it's hard to quantify or qualify what great is, but a couple of really interesting ones. Actually, I'm working on one right now that has brought back just such a sea of memories. It's about how long it takes to ride a century, which obviously the obvious answer, it depends. But what we're trying to do is present sort of a range of times and, you know, how to think about it, how to prepare for it, you know, because you watch, if you're new to cycling and you may be like, watch a Tour de France stage, you're like, century, all right, I'll knock that out in 4 hours or so.
Right.
But I mean, it totally depends on, you know, are you riding with people? Are you riding by yourself? Is it hilly? Is it flat? You know, so many different things.
What type of bike are you on? Sure.
Yeah, but it's really bringing me back to my Rutgers cycling days, where every February when I was on Rutgers cycling, February, like disgusting, cold, snowy February in New Jersey, we would put on our pathetic amount of cycling kit. You know, like I remember wearing my first pair of bib shorts, but then, you know, just regular tights over them, you know, the socks over the cycling shoes for shoe cover type things, just a straight up puffy coat instead of a cycling jacket. Just horrific. And just going out. And I mean, these days are probably like, from dawn till dusk, it took us, because it was a lot of climbing. There were a lot of us. Was mayhem.
So it took like 12 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I loved it. It was.
I guess the days are shorter in February, though, too. Maybe it was like 8 hours.
It might have been probably closer to 10. But like, it was some of the best times on the bike that I remember. It sucked so much, but okay. I learned so much about riding and drafting and like being a smart cyclist, because when you're out on a century, like, and you're not a great cyclist, you haven't been doing it for very long, you will do anything to make it easier on yourself. So that was how I learned how to stay in drafts.
Okay.
I don't think I would have learned otherwise.
Well, it's a good way to do it, I guess. You get tired. Yeah, sure.
So that's been fun. Although I will say, tangenty here.
I don't think that's a word, but okay.
But I had put a thing on Facebook asking for how long it takes people to ride centuries and if they had any stories about it. And I posted a picture of my like Rutgers cycling crew, and it just devolved into just so much love for the Rutgers cycling people. There's so many people that are commenting and are just like, oh, I loved you guys. You guys were great. And you know what? We were.
Okay. Okay. Well, that really gets to the question today of, can you train outside for cycling? Which apparently you can.
Apparently you can. I guess, yeah, this all was, you know, 15 years ago. I think amongst us, we had one trainer that, I mean, actually did get borrowed.
One, like, indoor turbo
exactly,
trainer.
Exactly, turbo trainer.
It's what we might call a smart trainer, but before that, the dumb trainer.
Yeah, this was a dumb trainer, like... Actually, I think there was a year where we all started getting the janky, like, Magnavox ones that are, you know, $150 and terrible. But I think one guy had a Cyclops indoor trainer, and it was a big deal.
Sure. Fluid for the win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, none of this magnet BS. So, yeah, that's where I came from, was just you rode outside because that was the option. But I actually was interviewing, just to go on another, I was interviewing someone for a different article, and we were discussing who needs power meters. And one of the questions that came up as I was talking to people about it is, a lot of people actually understand power a lot better now because they come into cycling and get a smart trainer.
Sure.
So power... Actually, funny enough, I was sort of crunching the numbers. I was like, oh, my gosh, it's cheaper to get a smart trainer than it is to get a power meter, which is wild. Mm. Makes no sense.
Mm.
Not really sure how that works.
Yeah. I've not really thought about it. I guess it probably can be made bigger, or it doesn't have to be like waterproof and you know, lighter and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So it got into this conversation of, which would you buy first, a smart trainer or a power meter?
Mm.
Especially if you didn't previously have an indoor trainer. So got a lot of, you know, very varied responses. But one of the common things that a couple coaches said to me was, they're now seeing a lot more athletes coming to them from the smart trainer. Like, they're not outdoor cyclists. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. cyclists who got into it, you know, whether it was during the pandemic or just they started on Zwift or Peloton or whatever, sure. and now they want to ride outside.
And that's probably the heart of this question, really, is, you know, how do you train outside for cycling when you've, you know, learned to train indoors?
Yeah. So you've had a couple experiences now where you've actually heard from people who've gotten your training plans in the winter and are using them on the trainer, and the plans are, you know, your training plans can be used indoors or outdoors. They have smart downloads, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And people are finishing the plans and the weather's getting better. And the common thing for newer cyclists is like, oh, well, I can't use a training plan anymore. I'm riding outside. And I think the first time you saw it, you were so kerfuffled.
Right. Yeah, because my, you know, as you say, you know, you ride bikes outside. This is where we race. You know, isn't this where you would train? And, you know, again, my perspective is that I started riding outdoors and then, you know, whatever, 5 or 10 years into that, I guess at some point we got indoor trainers and took it really serious and trained through the winter. But I get it. And then I think some of it is, like you say, the smart trainers, the Peloton, the structured workout downloads where these things are coming down and they're telling you what to do. This is the erg mode where, you know, you just have to pedal and then the resistance changes magically and you're not shifting or anything and you just follow the workout.
Side note, erg mode, super dangerous for us low cadence folks because we're like, oh, we're down to 10 RPMs,
yeah, try
the
me.
Sweet spot.
Right. Then it's not accurate anymore. And yeah, you're ready to go. So yeah, and then you go outside and all of a sudden your brain has to do a lot of work because you have to choose a route, you have to navigate, not get hit by cars or hit a tree, you know, and then you have to shift and you have to pedal faster or harder. And then you might decide that you have a goal, something like, you know, 3 by 10 minutes of moderate effort. And the smart trainer might have done that conveniently in a, you know, 45 to 60 minute workout where you never had to think and you could just, you know, talk to people on your phone or something the whole time. Now you have to be really engaged in the workout and be outside and, you know, in an environment where you decide on where you go. So it's possible, certainly. The answer is yes. But it is going to take a bit of commitment and planning. And just like anything, it is a skill.
Yeah, and it's going to look a lot messier, I think, is the big thing. And it, not just because you're going to get mud on your bike. Sorry, your bike's going to get dirty. But also because, you know, you're probably used to, if you are this person who has come from training indoors, you know, when you look at the download of your power file after the workout, it's perfect, right? If the workout went well, obviously. But it's perfect. It's got these nice little flat lines and they're all even and it looks great.
There's no variability, right?
Yeah. Then you go outside and like you're supposed to be doing 3 by 10 minute climbs, but guess what? The climb took 8.5 minutes and now you have to go like down a little bit and then go back up. Mm-hmm. Or you know, a car was turning out and you had to slam on the brakes and now your 2 minute thing got completely messed up.
Right.
So it's not going to look as good.
And so we say 80% is a passing grade and that's part of the reason, right? Like it was, okay, you were supposed to work moderately for 30 minutes. Did you do that today? Right. Maybe you had to divide it into 6 by 5 minute or 10, 8, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 or something like this. I don't know if that adds up to 30, but something like that. You took a break, a little extra, you had to make up 5 minutes at the end because it was only an 8 minute hill. It was on flat. You know, you certainly can do intervals on flat. And so what I try and remind people is if they're doing any sort of races, usually, you know, you go and do a mountain bike race, which is quite variable. There's coasting. But if you watch your heart rate, it's actually very pinned, usually towards threshold. And so they say, oh, wow, like I was working really hard and my heart rate was actually up. Especially if you've been basing off of heart rate, you can see, oh, okay, well, there maybe is more to the story than just simply, you know, pedaling in this very specific way or very steady way. And then if you go and do something like a road time trial, that's probably the best thing to see because now you're holding your power super steady for 40 kilometers and you maybe see, oh, where would that route be? You know, okay, I have a route like that at home or this is, you know, near my home and I could go up and replicate that. So we have clients in Toronto and Pittsburgh and New York and all these cities where people somehow find little industrial loops and little blocks where they can do, you know, park loops where they can do these intervals, right?
Side note, another Rucker story about that. Be super careful if you're new to an office park and you're going to use it for practicing for crits. One of my teammates actually lost a couple of his front teeth because what he didn't realize was that one of the parking lots had a chain across it.
Oh, no.
And went to go do an interval and smashed into it. And A lot of blood, a lot of teeth through skin, not great. So before you jump into said office park and start just raging through it, do a slow lap and look for...
For sure. And again, you might say, okay, well, this is a lot, right? But it's the nature of a crit race or a bicycle race or a group ride or, you know, just enjoying nature is that there's variability and you have to keep your head up and watch where you're going, right? And this is good for us. This is our brains and our bodies love having to, you know, process information and react to it. And indeed, that's cycling. Now, you could be an indoor Zwift esports person. You love going to spin class. You know, you don't have to do this, but it certainly can be taken outside. When we build plans, I try and encourage that, you know, you can just follow the description or the title. The title might be like 3 by 10 minutes. Go give a try at that, right? And that's that 80% is a passing grade. Did you do 3 by 10 minutes on something? And I do think that thinking about where would you do it is often, the environment can often make it pretty simple. You know, we're very fortunate. We have, 8 to 12 minute climb or a few of them pretty close. So when there's a set of intervals, you go to the climb and you ride up it for that time. You turn around, you come back down to the bottom and then you do it again. And if it was 4 by 8, there's your workout, right? You barely even have to. I did this with the kids, our local, race team. And we did 8 minutes up and then we sort of noted where we got to. And then we did a different type of interval. I think we did 30-30s to start, and then we did steady because I wanted to mix it all up on them so they had to think all the time. And then we did another type of interval, and we were just going to the same spot on the hill. So that's the other way, you know, it used to be you'd do more like the local hill, whatever the time is, and you'd go, you know, moderate up it or faster up it, or you try and beat your time up it, or you today we're going to do it for 5 times, so you'd pace accordingly. And so that's the other way to think about training outside is just what do you have around you? A lot of people have 3 to 5 minute climbs around them. You know, we certainly have listeners who are in Colorado and they have a 2 hour climb or a 1 hour climb, you know, around them. And so they can go do things like 3 by 20 minutes or 60 minutes moderate, something like that. And so when you have this environment around you, you can certainly go and do that. But that's not to say anywhere else, you know, you can't do laps of something, or, you know, I did 2 hours of tempo the other day just out on our gravel roads and it was a little, you know, rolly, but I just tried to stick to flatter roads that were safe and try and make, you know, lots of right-hand corners. And, you know, it was a great adventure and I was moving really fast and having to think for that whole 2 hours, but to get ready for a gravel race, right? Where it's, you know, you're on the gas for extended periods.
Which I think gets to the what is your actual goal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if your goal is a gravel race or a mountain bike race or a road race or a crit, and I think this is the point that, like, often, like, you're like, oh, I can train for a road race on the trainer. I would argue you absolutely cannot.
No, you see the triathletes, some of them will now be, like, more on the smart trainer and the smart treadmills. And I get it, but I've also seen, you know, they fall over and they break their hip, you know, getting water at a water fountain. So I don't know if that story resonates with anyone. But
well, and I think beyond corners, I think actually one of the biggest, my tangent is always the eating and drinking. Actually, when you're on a smart trainer, everyone keeps their water on a table beside them. And that's great if you're doing a Zwift race or something and you actually, like, you want to be, like, really accessible to your water because you know you're going to be going hard. But normal time, put it in the bike.
Sure.
Because that movement of being able to, like, lean down, grab the water, bring it up, take a drink, put it back is actually, like, wildly hard. Mm-hmm. The number, you know, even when we were in Spain 5 years ago with the junior camp, most of the kids couldn't eat and drink. And obviously, a lot of them have gotten really, really good at this point, you know, 5 years later. But at that point, we had to keep stopping because they had to get food out and eat it, take their water bottles out and drink. Because they couldn't actually do that while riding.
Mm-hmm. And so this is, you know, the skills should be embedded. Sometimes when we think about skills training, we think, oh, pylons in a paved lot. But the skills should be embedded into that interval session. So I was talking about 4 by 8 minutes, like you're drinking maybe on the climb up or just as you're turning around, you're descending technical gravel, your coats are coming on and off, that sort of thing. Another session I just did was mountain biking. It was 5 by 3 minutes. And just on a single track climb, there was one little dip in it where, you know, I got like 3, 4, 5 seconds. There was like a drop off into a berm. It was really fun. And then back to climbing. So I did get a little bit of break in the 3 minutes. So I think the actual interval ended up being like 3:30 or something. But there was a tiny bit of break in the middle. And then super fun technical descent that took you know, a minute 40 if I was smooth on it. And then I'd sort of soft pedal for, you know, a minute and then back into that loop. And so it was very specific to cross country mountain bike racing on the trails we, you know, have raced in the past. A little bit of fun, maybe, you know, over half of it was fun. But that was the interval, right? And power wise, you know, it was a little spiky, but if you look at it, you can tell like, oh, there's 3 minutes. Oh, there's 3 minutes, right? And then there was, you know, more coasting in the recoveries. But again, it's very possible to have perfect looking intervals outdoors. It's just setting yourself up for that as right. well. And again, perfect depends a little bit, like, does it look like the race at some point versus does it look like a smart trainer that just is drawing lines on a screen? That's not necessarily perfect. The body doesn't work like that. You know, the body likes some cycles where there's, you know, a little micro breaks in how you're pedaling, little surges when you stand up. The body really likes moving like that. So especially some people find the trainer very difficult. And I think those are the people that really like variability. They don't like the super like monotonous power output where it's just steady eddy. And some people like that. Those are probably your time trialists and your, you know, maybe all day gravel racer people that just can slow burn that super steady. But then your mountain bikers, your cross racers probably prefer stuff that's, you know, more on off or just a little more cyclical where they're like over and under the goal power or the goal, mm-hmm. goal output.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that maybe gets missed on the trainer that you can do outside is actually sprinting. Sprinting on the trainer is sure. actually pretty difficult because it's hard to, you can't move the bike. You shouldn't move the bike. If you have a carbon bike, do not stand up and try to move it while you're doing a sprint.
Well, you can. I tend to discourage indoor standing a ton, partially for that reason. Then, as you say, the skill of moving the bike side to side, a lot of people don't have that balance.
I do not have that.
And so then you miss out on the coordination of standing climbing, standing to like give your butt a break, give your back a break, you know, just keeping the gear moving, accelerating back onto a wheel. There's a lot of ways where that movement pattern is important outdoors. And if someone hasn't developed it, then just grooving it on the trainer by doing things like 1 minute standing intervals is tough because that bike is locked vertically. And as you say, it is a lot of strain on a carbon bike. But I assume I haven't heard a ton about that in the last couple of years. So I assume maybe the manufacturers are doing that, but it is added weight to the frame. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd believe that or not.
Well, and either way, you're just not going to get the same body movement. Mm-hmm. Like even if you are standing, you're not doing the actual side to side.
And I do think if you look at cyclocross racers, even the gravel racers in things like Unbound and this sort of stuff, there is, you know, some pretty dynamic standing bits in there, right? Whether it's to try and like hover over the seat on a technical uphill or something like that to clear something, sprinting at the finish line. I mean, Unbound seems like it finishes in sprints now, right? And then certainly the starts are all, you know, the people at the front are going to be standing to in that critical moment. And then certainly the climbs in any of the XC races are, you know, women and men now are standing a fair bit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So again, when we're doing our intervals, then you probably want to be working on that so that you have that movement pattern as an option.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to throw a huge monkey wrench in this whole thing, or maybe it's just a sharp U-turn. Also something you might need to practice, especially if you're a triathlete. They love making courses.
Yeah.
With those.
No, I'm doing that tomorrow with a super triathlete. Fun. So
it's the best. Okay. So here's my curveball. Indoor World Championships are now in September.
Okay.
So, can someone train for indoors, outdoors?
I don't see why, right? Again, this gets to...
see why or why not?
I guess why not. I want to say why, but I don't see why you couldn't, like why you shouldn't enjoy the summer. You know, it's probably easier to do volume outside, so I don't see why someone wouldn't go outside and develop a bunch of fitness and coordination outside. But I do think in that scenario, you would want in those last 6 weeks for sure to be getting specific with the trainer, the feeling of it, the pedal stroke, because it is specific. As someone who tries to not ride a lot of trainer anymore, it is a different thing for sure. So I think like any goal, you'd want to get specific as it approached. getting into some of the Zwift group rides and races or esports races, for sure. But I don't see any reason you wouldn't develop a general base and do that outside. It's certainly going to be better and more fun to do it outside.
So do not feel as though you are stuck on your trainer all summer. And I think this applies not just for Worlds in September, but I think there are a lot of people that will continue racing on the trainer, or, like, you know, they'll have a group ride on Zwift once a week or whatever.
Yeah, a lot of busy, you know, people with kids, you know, you can stay in the house. I was just talking to a past athlete, good friend, on a group ride this last week, and he was saying that Zwift has been, like, because he's actually in great shape. I was telling him, he's, you know, wow, you're really in great shape despite, you know, you're busy at work and kids. And he said, you know, the weekly Zwift thing has just been great because he can go and, you know, during nap time and try and squeeze in 45 or 60 minutes of hard work, and then he tries to get out on the weekend or whatever, right? But yeah, I think it's a tool. I think it's a great thing. I don't think we're villainizing anything, but we are saying, you know, it's okay to train outside as well. And hopefully we've covered a bunch of that. Have we gotten to everything?
I think so. Other than just, let's maybe just touch on the practicality of, okay, you have a workout in Training Peaks, you know, say they got your custom 3-month made for you training plan.
Firstly, you are a smart person.
Over at consummateathlete.com. But okay, so they have a training plan. They have a workout today.
Yep.
How do they, I mean, again, on Zwift, it's easy, download,
sure,
move it into Zwift, whatever. I don't actually know, because I haven't actually done a workout on Zwift. Apologies
for that.
It's
pretty clear. There's a Training Peaks folder that you got to find, and you can only do today's workout in Zwift. Now, for a Garmin user or a Wahoo user, it should, once you sync those accounts, which we do put those links in the training plans as well, but those are easy to Google, you know, Training Peaks to Wahoo sync, then it should pop up on your device, really. It works very slick on the newer devices. And then you could follow that workout. And I do, I was pretty against it for my own training. And then this winter, I did actually try and do it once a week for my main intervals. And I would say I got more of my intervals done, like, well, with the download, which is a bit of a change of tone on my behalf, but it was good. And I did find, like, you know, if you, my criticism was always like, well, what if it takes 30 minutes to get to the hill? And so it's not that hard to pause the workout, but, like, keep your workout time rolling, but to pause the structured
gotcha
intervals or go back a one, like, especially on a touchscreen Garmin, at least it's pretty intuitive to just go back a interval or go forward or pause the workout, pause the, like, download for a second. So I found it great for intervals. Like, you know, I was doing a bunch of the 40-20s over the winter, and it was great. Yeah, it's because some of these things are hard to keep, you know, the timer going and know when you're at 10. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not impossible. It's a 10-minute interval. It's really not that hard. But some people find it very hard to do the math and to count it out and to use the lap function. So this really automates it and gives you a couple different displays where you're, like, really focused on your power output. And yeah, it was pretty good. So I think it's pretty straightforward from that perspective. But that's the workout download.
Also, as always, side note, just be safe when you're riding outside. Remember that you are, in fact, on a, you know, live road. You are not on Zwift Island.
Right.
So just be very, very careful when you are looking down and, like, messing around on your device. Like, there's no shame in stopping and, like, sorting things out, especially if you find that, okay, the one button didn't do the thing. Okay, stop and
sure
figure it out.
Sure.
Just don't be, I've seen this happen, like,
well,
luckily to no major, like, issue, but I have seen way too many cyclists, you know, swerving into the middle of the road because they're looking down at their screen and then,
similar,
you know, boom,
to driving your car. Yeah, you don't want to be that person.
Exactly.
So, but you could also do that workout, you know, and this is where I get frustrated, is if people aren't tech savvy, then the learning curve and the day-to-day, like, staring at the device, and I spent 50 minutes trying to get the workout to load on my thing, and it's like, well, I mean, it was 6 30-second sprints in, you know, or 30-second race efforts or strides or whatever it is. Like, just go do your workout, you know, roll out the door, and then over the course of that 1 hour ride or 90-minute ride or 2 hour ride, you're going to do 6 by 30 seconds. Like, put that in your brain or write it on a little card or look at it on your phone, you know, before you go out, or stop if you forget. But 6 by 30, that's what you're remembering. 6 by 30 hard, do it. And this is what I mean by the, you know, it's not really that complicated. And even something like a 40-20 can seem complicated, but, you know, you just have to remember it's, say, 3 by 10 minutes, right? And that's all the 40-20 is. So then you're going to go 40 seconds hard, 20 seconds easy, every minute on the minute for 10 minutes. So you just really start the timer at 10, you know, lap time, starts the timer. So you go hard for 40 seconds, rest for 20. At minute one, you go hard again for 40 seconds and then rest for 20 seconds. At minute two, hard for 40 seconds. And so you're going to do that till you get to 10 minutes. Then you're going to go back down the hill and go again. So it's really not that hard once you get the rhythm for it and figure out, okay, well, where could I do something like that? So again, we have a nice quiet gravel road very close to us where I do most of my intervals and it works great. You might do this, you know, out on a quiet road and just go for 30 minutes down the road or something, right? Or like it could maybe work on some rail trails are quiet enough. You could do something like that. So just figuring out where can I do this, and that will sort of like motivate the workout.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as if you are working with a coach also, like, you know, a lot of the time the first thing you're talking to clients about is what do you have around you? Like, what is accessible? You know, mm-hmm. how long does your local hill take and that kind of thing?
And actually, well, and I love when athletes are like, you know, I don't have a 20-minute climb near my home. What are you doing? And they ask, right? And then we try and troubleshoot it and sort of co-create the workout. And sometimes it is, yeah, just go find a 20-minute stretch because it wasn't meant to be on a 20-minute hill. Like, it can be, but it doesn't have to be. Or it's like, okay, well, you have a 5-minute hill or a 4-minute hill. It's more about the duration. So you're going to do 10 by 4 minutes, maybe, you know, because you live in the city and there's this 4-minute hill, and that's the best case scenario on a weekday. Like, it's monotonous. Like, sometimes that's the problem with 10 by 4 is like a little like up and down and up and down and up and down. But, you know, sometimes I push back and say, well, you are doing a 200-mile gravel race. Like, monotony is something you're going to have to get used to as well, right? So there is that. But yeah, I think the figuring out what you're able, the area you have and what are the different routes you can use, that's really a training plan, right? You have the, like, I know one client was telling me just on the phone on Friday here, you know, I have this great 90-minute path route that goes and it's really nice in nature. And I know it takes about 90 minutes and it's flat. I can stay in my zone two or my under 75% or stay in my low intensity very easily. And so this is just great. I want to keep this in there. And so, like, that's almost their workout, is this route on Wednesdays and Sundays. And then there's, like, you know, they go to this place and they always ride up and down this hill, you know, whatever the name of the hill is by you. And that's always your Tuesday, right? And so you start getting, like, it's not even the intervals that you really need to know. It's what, where are you going on your bike? And then it sort of builds out the training that way, right? Mm-hmm. I always mountain bike on Saturday, you know, usually at this place. And this is what I do. I ride for 2 hours and maybe I ride a little harder or a little easier or hard in these places or this many times up the hill. And that's where the training can really come into your outdoor routine.
Yeah, I love it. And also, what people used to do people do masking tape on their top tube anymore? That's, like, one of my favorite things.
The, like, odd person will, especially when they're getting used to training. And it is, like, you sort of have to learn how to train a little bit. So I get it. But yeah, the odd person will do that.
Again, so you would just write down your, you know, 3x10 or whatever onto your masking tape and put it on your top tube. I like that because you could also leave yourself a little note, like, you know,
I probably prefer that. Sometimes I'm like, I wish, you know, probably the workout can be simple enough, but I get it. Some people want to have, you know, then we get a warm up and there's some warm up drills or something, or some workouts get complicated. But I do think that, to your point, some of the indoor workouts are extra complicated because we're trying to entertain a little
sure.
bit. And I do this, right? It's like 10 minutes of sweet spot and then 2 minutes break and then 2 minutes of high. I'm trying to think of, like, one of my more complicated ones. 2 minutes of sweet spot, but super high cadence, then 2 minutes off, then 9 minutes of sweet spot, normal cadence, and then 2 minutes off, and then 2 minutes of high, super high cadence sweet spot, and then 2 minutes off. And then it goes like this, but I would never give that to someone outside. And that workout says, if you can go outside, just do 40 minutes of sweet spot, you know, i.e. 4x10 minutes. So it sort of describes that. But indoors, you know, we maybe have a little more excitement, especially when we have a smart trainer that can do some of this extra thinking for us and arrangement for us. Outside, probably just remembering, like, the fundamentals, like 4x10, 2x20, 5x3, and then keeping it simple enough that you can remember it in your head as you go out.
Even from a safety element, again, I think when you just have way too many factors you're trying to think about when you're outdoors, especially if you're, you know, a newer rider or just you're not a super pro rider. I've been riding for 15 years. I would still put myself in this category of, like, I wouldn't really think, like, overthink my cadence while trying to do an interval, while trying to time it,
sure,
et cetera. Because that's just, like, a recipe for me not paying attention to what's happening around me.
Sure. And that's, again, sometimes the workouts will have things like heart, you know, a power and a heart rate and a cadence, and people will want to know, you know, which one should you focus on. And
also, cadence can just bite me. It's just really where I'm at.
I think, but... yeah, fundamentals is like, okay, you're going to work hard for this period, or if it's an endurance ride, you know, you're going to work not hard, low intensity for this period. And so heart rate sometimes can help limit how hard you work. And then if it's an interval, you're usually using effort or power to like motivate, you know, 5x3 hard. So if it was a decision, that's sometimes how I think about it. Like easier stuff is sometimes limited. Like you're trying to not go as hard. That's where heart rate can be really nice. And then power and feeling can help with the harder bits. Now, all the stuff is useful, but I think when you're thinking about just getting started outside with training, and if you were making that decision, that's how I would think about it is, you know, 5x3 is just get yourself up that hill 5 times. And if you don't have power, then your feeling is great. And, you know, you could time yourself up that hill. Does it take 3 minutes or does it take 3 minutes and 5 seconds after you get tired? Right. And then that's feedback. Oh, and then in a month, can you do it in 2 minutes and 50 seconds? And that's feedback. Right. And so that's training. And the outdoors, it's so great. Right. When you start seeing that, oh, okay, the hills, this is how the hill's going. Today I did 10 times up this hill or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love it. Got anything else?
No, I think we covered most of it. We covered, you know, the goal. You're sort of thinking about like you're preparing for something. So that's usually, you know, I'm getting ready for a certain type of group ride or a certain type of race. And so that might motivate where you're doing intervals. And then we talked about the route where you would have like your flat, you know, endurance day route. And then you might have your harder day where the route is motivating it, right? You go to the steepest hill in town and you ride up it 4 times, and those are your intervals. And so that to me is training outside.
Side note, not all of your intervals should be on a hill. Just
no,
putting it
no,
out there.
And again, that's where we remind that, you know, most people don't have a ton of hill around them to do.
I know, the way you just phrased that was like, then you have this hilly route for your intervals. So I just wanted to make sure that people weren't like, oh, so every interval has to be.
No, I mean, you do fall into that, and I am a person who falls into that. But no, for sure, you've done your time trial, you've done your road criteriums, you've done things like that. So I think that's super good and a great experience to have to take the whatever. You know, this is almost the training thing then, is like every week you could try and do 5x3, but do it in a different scenario, like paved climb, you know, steep climb, gravel climb, mountain bike climb.
These are still all climbs.
So we're going on a lot of climbs. And then again, on a like crit route or like a little thing where you can make right-hand corners or just, you know, pinning it down the road or whatever, right? And you could do that same workout, same but different is something in coaching we're always looking at, right? Can you hop the log but slightly differently, right? A different angle, different technique, different speed, you know, different bike. So this is the same thing with intervals. You know, if we think about it as a skill, is can you do 5x3 on a flat, on the pavement, on the gravel, on the mountain bike, on the, you know, time trial bike, you know, and still pace it and get that workout done. And I think that's where we start seeing the really skilled athletes are like, yep, for sure, I can do that. No problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I can thrive in this environment, whatever you throw at me. You know, you give me sure. A single speed, I'm still going to do 5x3.
Yep. Okay. What else we got? We covered that.
I think, you know, I have sort of our tenets. So we have 80% as a passing grade. We have 90% of life is showing up. And then,
which I think we talked about during spring blahs a couple of weeks ago, the 90% of life is showing up, I think does go back to that. If your goal is something outdoors, you shouldn't default to the trainer every time there's a raindrop.
Sure.
Which I think is the tendency of people. Certainly it's, you know, you fall into that some weeks. And, you know, it is easier. Your bike doesn't get gross, etc. But sometimes you do have to go train in the rain, show up, because race day might be rainy.
Sure. Yeah. And that gets into, you know, we're talking about showing up in terms of knowing today that, you know, knowing the workout. So it's not just getting out the door at 10 a.m., but it's also knowing 5x3 and I'm going to do this on this hill. You know, and I'm going to do it on this bike, and that bike's going to be ready, and the tires are there, and I've looked a bit at the tire pressure, the shock pressure. You know, I fixed that lockout that was broken, or this is the fuel I'm going to take. So when we talk about showing up, it's simple. It is simple, but it's not easy, because you do have to show up repeatedly and test the stuff and practice the stuff in a way that's specific to that goal. And that is, it's not, you know, any one day is not a big deal, but it's when you string a year of showing up, checking your tire pressure, fueling like you mean it and fueling like you will in the race, that it's like, oh, wow, yeah, that 3 minute hill is a 2 minute hill now, right? And that's where you see the huge breakthroughs in people is when they do the work, they show up, but like when they show up, it's not just showing up, you know, oh, I sort of got there and my gears don't work and my tires are flat and I don't have any food today and it's cold and I don't have any, you know, my coat. It's the person goes and does a great job on it and practices all these, you know, embeds all these skills into it.
Love it.
Okay. Cool. Do you want to do the last tenet since it's written down?
Well, we just did 80 and 90. Let's hit 100.
So there's 100%. And then, so the 100% is much of the training process is spent purposefully not going 100%.
Which I do think is something that indoor training people can get a little bit.
Sure. Every day has something in it, right? Because it's entertainment. So this is where some of the, you know, different training softwares on the internet, they're entertaining you. They're trying to bring you back. The reality is that a lot of our sessions are not magical. You know, I like to say unremarkable, right? They're a 90 minute endurance session. Yes, it's only 90 minutes of zone two or 45 minutes of zone two if you're a bit more time crunched or endurance, we'll call it. But that's a lot of it, right? Is being restrained. I had a young athlete today who's racing tomorrow. And so he had, you know, his plan was to stay, you know, easy, even though we were mountain biking. So he did a great job of just spinning and no ego and, you know, letting the younger athletes go by him on the climbs. And he was just sticking to that plan. I was like, that's, again, showing up for the workout that was prescribed and he made it work, even though it was mountain biking and the group went mountain biking that day. He showed up and used his gears and, you know, he's a fit guy, so he can mountain bike pretty well off road. But I was like, that's pretty good maturity for like a, you know, a younger,
I'm so
you
impressed
know,
by
teenage
that.
Type athlete that could just be like, you know, I'm going to be the first guy through here.
I don't know that I have that kind of maturity.
No. And, you know, to do it on a mountain bike, it's a little awkward sometimes. So, yeah, that's the, you know. That's the training plan is, you know, you go out and when we're outdoors again, it's sometimes picking. That's sort of a bad example in some ways, but, you know, it's picking to ride your road bike on the easy days and then riding your mountain bike on the hard days, mm-hmm. You know, riding the flat route on your easy days.
Love it. Cool. All right. Well, we will wrap up there. As always, hit us up with the questions at Consummate Athlete on Instagram, consummateathlete.com. When this goes live, we are like 1 week out from a huge site renovation.
Okay. Well, don't overpromise.
Update.
Could run over time, but we'll see.
Well, that's true. But I am not overpromising on the site. It's fantastic. So excited. Really jazzed on it. We'll talk about that when it actually does go live. But yeah, as always, thanks for tuning in. Rate, review, share, etc. We deeply appreciate it. Thank you so much, and we will see you next week.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Consummate Athlete Podcast. If you want to hear more training, racing, and endurance sport advice, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. You can also subscribe to our newsletter at consummateathlete.com for a weekly dose of inspiration and advice straight to your inbox.